looking back on the big news stories of the first 10 years of ANN. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the Aero News special feature. Thanks for downloading us today. This is the third installment of my conversation with ANN CEO and Editor-in-Chief Jim Campbell, looking back at some of the more memorable moments and the big stories in the first 10 years of ANN's 24/7 coverage of aviation and aerospace. Jim, we've arrived at 2004. Obviously, something that's still being developed and talked about today, the Garmin G1000 debuted in 2004 and created a renaissance in what airplanes are.
Well, and let's be very fair here. Actually, the first company to come out with a GA flight deck was Avadyne, and it showed up first in the SR-20 and SR-22 series, where it just blew everybody away. I mean, it was something that nobody could believe that this was coming to GA. Mm-hmm. And of course, Garmin, being the 600-pound gorilla in the avionics industry, wasn't going to sit by very long and let an upstart like Avadyne take a market all unto itself. I mean, it was fun to watch. We were the first to fly the G1000 prior to one of the AOPA events, that one in Philadelphia, as I recall, and had a marvelous time sampling that. We had done the same with the Avadyne the year before and had spent a just tremendous amount of time flying it. It was an extraordinary system at the time, as was the G1000. And the best part is that they've both received a number of upgrades over the years and are definitely keeping up with the times. But where dials and gauges and needles and so forth used to be the order of the day, it's now all glass panel and big, bright, colorful screens. And it's pretty exciting stuff.
You know, it's reached the point now over the past 10 years where if you're building a new airplane, if you're an experimenter and you're building an airplane, and you're faced with the choice of whether to equip it with steam gauges or glass panel, not only are cost and weight now almost on the side of going all electronic, but frankly, airplanes tend to have long lifespans. And I don't know in 15 or 20 years from now how easy it's going to be to get, you know, a mechanical gyro rebuilt or an altimeter, you know, rebuilt or any of that stuff.
I mean, actually, we're seeing the first signs of that issue right now.
Well, it's just amazing how quickly it's changed, but then the times in which we live. Other big deal in 2004, FAA releases final LSA and sport pilot rules, and that has kind of created a competitive landscape in the industry that looks a little bit like the post-World War II days, where there are now over 100 light sport aircraft on the U.S. market and a general consensus that they cannot possibly all survive.
Well, there's no question that they cannot possibly all survive. The market isn't that big. And while a number of entities crowed that this was to be the beginning of a rebirth for aviation, they've totally missed the fact that for there to be a rebirth of aviation, there's got to be a rebirth in perception of aviation. It's not an easy thing to sell an airplane to a populace that has never really been proven, or excuse me, to whom has been proven the value and the efficiencies, and with a media that, frankly, at times takes great pleasure in denigrating what aviation's all about. The misunderstandings have really hurt the public's perception of aviation. So when LSA came out and everybody was crowing about what a wonderful opportunity this was to regrow aviation, nobody had a clue about how to sell it.
Well, there also seems to have been a miscalculation on exactly who would be brought into the process by the sport pilot certificate, because at the time it was envisioned as getting, you know, 20 to 40 year olds involved in aviation because the cost of entry would be lower. And what appears to have happened is that a lot of older pilots who, for whatever reason, weren't confident that they could maintain their medicals have decided to go into a segment of the sport where it matches up with their intents anyway. If they don't intend to fly anything other than VFR day, limited cross country, if they're just getting up to look down, as one person calls it, dropping back to the sport pilot privileges with a private certificate and buying a light sport aircraft looked like the way to go. I think one of the ways that kind of skewed the market was that these were people who could afford $100,000 or more. And so it looks as though that may have had an influence on, retarding the development of the low end of LSA, which really hasn't developed the way people thought it might.
No, and this is the part that kind of drives me a little nuts. There were some entities that were so interested in promoting LSA in order to promote their own interests that they really did not have a plan for how to promote the movement outside of those interests. And we ran into a couple of interesting problems in that the first aircraft to show up were literally copies, I shouldn't say literally copies, but pretty close copies of the aircraft that had been previously available. And while a lot of effort could have been put into how to make these aircraft less expensive and more efficient and more palatable to an economy and a class of people that had no problem putting $100,000 down for a new boat, the concept of putting $100,000 down for a little airplane that was limited only to VFR days and two people and so forth and so on was missing the point. There was an opportunity to get out in front and truly sell the excitement of aviation as well as the value, and it's still never truly been undertaken. Everybody's been so interested in their own venues, building memberships for associations or work for pseudo groups or associations that want to be the arbiters of this and that, that they've missed the fact that the ultimate job was to market this industry to a public that has kind of grown jaded on the whole concept of aviation. And to this day, it's still a tough sell simply because few see the value that you and I do from having experienced it.
You talk about copies of existing airplanes. In many cases, some of them were just redata-plated planes that would not have qualified except that they were downgraded to 1320 gross takeoff weight. A lot of these planes out of the Czech Republic and so forth. And it looks like, in terms of the vision that you just described, we may have gotten 100 models into this new segment before somebody like Icon Aircraft has figured that out.
Exactly. And there's the nice part is that there is still a tremendous amount of room for growth out there. I mean, there's some folks out there who frankly, should be getting a lot more attention than they're getting right now. A good example is a guy like Randy Schlitter, who has some very inexpensive versions of aircraft that look much like the real thing, but using sailcloth and the quote-unquote tube and rag construction of the ultralight days, gives you most of the utility for a lot less money. And then there are other folks that are looking for innovative ways to bring value to the proposition, either by getting them to do things that normal or regular airplanes do not do, a la the Icon with its amphib capabilities and so forth, and to build something that's truly exciting, innovative, and attractive. Too many airplanes are being built for a market that hasn't existed in decades. We need to start building airplanes for the markets of tomorrow. I'm not going to tell you that I know exactly what that market is. I've got my own ideas, and of course, at the helm of ANN, we see an awful lot of stuff go by, go across the transom here about what works and what doesn't and what successes people are claiming or showing. But it's pretty obvious that the LSA industry and market really needs to shape up and do some soul searching before it can take a real leap forward in building quantities of airplanes to the extent that they had hoped to when LSA was first configured and discussed.
2004 also saw a stunning achievement in the commercial space race, Spaceship One and the Ansari X Prize. More in a moment. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR22 GTS, Cirrus's premium luxury ride that has come to define Cirrus aircraft as one of the world's elite. Every dream option from supple leather seats to an exhilarating 310 horsepower performance and speed come standard, giving new meaning to the phrase fully loaded. When flying the SR22 GTS, getting there is truly more than half the fun. To learn more, call 888-750-9000 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Welcome back to the Aero News Special Feature. I'm Paul Plack, talking with Jim Campbell about ANN's first 10 years. Jim, I want to move on to another big story of 2004, and that is Spaceship One wins the Ansari X Prize, and I could not believe it when it was already the fifth anniversary in 2009.
Well, I'll tell you what, and as you recall, we kind of had an inside track to a lot of that, because the nice part is that I'd become good friends with Peter Diamandis, who is the fellow who inspired, designed, and put forth the X Prize and directed the X Prize's ultimate awarding to the team led by Bert Rutan and flown by Mike Melville and Brian Binney. Having flown a number of the chase missions where I was at some point just a couple of feet away from Spaceship One and White Knight, or Spaceship One on reentry and return, and to have been in the hangars in the morning as these things were rolled out, to talk to the pilots, to be part of that excitement, to hear the whispers prior to everybody firing up aircraft and getting ready to go. It was just one of the most exciting times of my life, and very few things up till now really compete with that. It was the birth of a mindset that said, yes, I can, and yes, I will, when it comes to private space. And it was about as much fun as I've ever had. It was just a tremendous, tremendous year.
Well, and look where it's gone. I think we are on the doorstep of the commercial space age more rapidly than even some of the proponents thought we would be.
Yes and no. I mean, I'll tell you what, I like where it's going in a number of ways, but I think the most exciting things that are in our future are not even yet being seen and discussed. Granted, the master showmanship exhibited by, you know, the folks working at the direction of Richard Branson are going to be getting the lion's share of attention, and deservedly so in many cases. But there are a dozen different projects out there of tremendous excitement and great import that will get and will deserve equal or even greater amounts of attention as time goes on, because there are some truly revolutionary projects underway, some very exciting designs, and some just phenomenally gifted people pushing them along.
Well, and I think the real potential, or the important potential in private spaceflight, isn't even so much the tourism aspect as the fact that there are people working on a means to get a container of supplies to a location in space for, you know, on the order of 1/100th what NASA has traditionally had to spend to do it.
Exactly. Or for that matter, think about the value in somebody being in San Diego who wants to be in Tokyo in 2 hours. The kind of capabilities that we're building even suborbitally have the potential to derive platforms that can do just that. And in many cases, the engineering that's going into a Spaceship One or a Spaceship Two or a Lynx or any one of a dozen other projects that are well underway, this is the stuff that's going to change aviation as we know it. It's still a little ways away, but I'll tell you what, a decade from now, it's going to be, it can be and should be a truly interesting business.
We'll have more of our look back at the first decade of ANN after the first of the new year. Our long-form AeroCasts, this special feature in the Aero Briefing, are going to be in a brief hiatus over the holidays, returning on Monday, January 4th. Our short-form Touch and Go will continue next week, Monday through Thursday. As always, the website will have any breaking news in text form at aero-news.net. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day, a joyous holiday, and a happy and prosperous new year.